Welcome, adventurers, both young and old. If you're looking to find a place where immortal witches, portal-jumping scientists, and adorable baby knights collide, then you're in the right place. A magical adventure unlike any you have experienced before, as World Talkers, an unofficial Evermore fancast, is about to begin. Welcome back, everyone, to World Talkers, an unofficial Evermore fancast. We have a very special surprise for you today. Joining me is my co-host, Wyatt.
Hey, you guys!
We are super excited. It's just us two today, but we are joined by a very special guest. Would you like to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Bobby Cody.
and Bobby, you are actually a person in the park, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And what do you do there? What's your title? What's your position at Evermore?
Originally an actor, but recently I am a writer now for story development, and I'm also assistant for technical development too, mainly focused on audio.
Awesome. You have your hands on a lot of things then.
Yeah, now I do.
Good. Also, congratulations on the promotion or the new job.
Yeah.
There you go. We've heard a lot of great things coming from, we're friends with some of your old D&D pals.
Oh.
So they are really excited, and we are excited as well to see what you bring there.
Yeah, I am too. It's amazing. Such an amazing team. Everyone at Evermore is just so creative and just phenomenal to work with. And so just to be in the room creating is just, I don't know, kind of like the highlight of this season for me.
Good.
Among other things.
Yeah. And those are some of the things that we want to talk about today, especially we want to talk about your kind of past experience and also your experience being an actor in Evermore. And so we've always had a connection with your character, Giardani, from the beginning. And that's why when we were like, oh, our first cast interview, who do we want? We honestly thought of you because of our special interactions.
I'm so honored to. I love you guys. I like listen to you guys like religiously. So
Thank you so very much.
That's really sweet.
So first of all, kind of taking a step back from your character, obviously, but how do you explain what Evermore Park is to your friends, your family? Do you have a...
It depends on who I'm talking to. Like if I'm talking to other like theater people, which is a lot of my background, I usually just drop things like Sleep No More and things like that.
Yeah, the show in New York, correct? Yeah.
And so it's like it's similar to that, but where Sleep No More, you can touch everything but the actors. It's a little different at Evermore. And so I think you're even encouraged to not touch the actors at Evermore as well. But also you can't touch props and a lot of those kinds of things too. So there's a lot of hands off, which is a little different from Sleep No More. But it's definitely an immersive theatrical experience that is set in a high fantasy world. And then when they're like, huh, I go, it's like live action Skyrim. And they go, oh, cool.
That's actually a really great way to explain it.
Yeah.
I never thought of it like that. That's hilarious.
Well, good. And you have been actually on the team, Evermore team, for how long now?
On the 27th of this month of July was my 1 year anniversary with them.
Oh, there you go.
Congrats. That's awesome.
So I've been from the beginning for the actor.
Mm. So in the development of Evermore, when Evermore was being created, did you join not the roster, but like when they were calling for actors, is that when you started in, or were you involved in the Evermore process long before that?
Well, this is a crazy story.
Let's get into it.
So first, how this all happened, I teach an art course at the university, and my wife actually called me on my lunch, and she was like, do you know about this Evermore thing? And I was like, ever what? You know, and she was like, it's crazy right now. And I was like, no. She's like, all right, I'm going to send you a link. Just check it out. And I was like, okay. In that same lunch break, four other friends from totally different walks all called me at the during that break, right? And they were like, you were sending me messages, and they're like, Evermore, Evermore, Evermore. I'm like, what is Evermore, you know? So I watched
I think that's what
always what happens. You're blasted with everything Evermore, and you're like, what is this? Until what you find out.
And so initially I was thinking, oh, this is just a haunt. And I was like, I don't want to. I have friends who work in the haunt industry. And I was like, yeah, not my cup of tea. But then I watched the video with Dave and Marianne, Dave, who does a lot of like the armor and, stuff in the workshop, and Marianne, who was the head costumer at the time. And I was like, I know Marianne, but I knew her mainly local. And so I was like, well, she's really good. So, and then what sold me is I just finished watching a season of Face Off, and it was where Logan had come back for a second time in Face Off. And when I saw that Logan Long was a part of the project, I was like, all right, I'm in.
Right.
It didn't matter. I didn't care if it was a haunt or anything at that point. I was like, if that creative mind is attached to this, then I'll check it out.
See, I've seen maybe one, two episodes of Face Off, correct?
Face Off, yeah.
I need to watch more of it, but like, Logan crazy, was on there.
Yeah, crazy fan. Yeah, and so, and his mentor was like my favorite when her season was up too. So I was just like already, I was like, this is tied to some really, really amazing people, really brilliant kind of creative minds. And so I was like, yeah, how can I pass it up? And then I found out that auditions were done.
Oh, wow. Oh, really?
Yeah. And so by the time I was like, oh no, I was like, I missed it. So what I emailed them and I said, hey, you know, I'm on this other project right now. I can't make it in or anything. Would it be okay if I sent a video audition? And then I kind of like, I was still like on the fence. And then finally I was just one Sunday, I was just like, all right, fine, I'm going to do it. And so I did two monologues for them, one from King Lear. It's the end. It's when Lear is carrying Cordelia, mm-hmm. and he's like doing his howl, which is one of my favorite monologues to do. and it's just heartbreaking. And it's Shakespearean, so if it's the classical kind of motif that they're looking for. And then the other one I did, Cyrano de Bergerac, and it's the scene in the bar where the guy's talking about his big nose. So he's just makes like all these jokes about having a big nose, like, oh, you could have done this better. But I did that, I think, in 12 different accents.
Oh,
and
nice.
I kept changing each one. And I'm hoping that that was the one they're like, all right, we need to hire this guy. Right? So they, even though I missed auditions, they invited me back for callbacks. And so I went in for callbacks and had no idea, you know, that I was going to be competing against like 200 plus other actors in this part of Utah.
Right.
Because I'm more a Salt Lake performer. And so I never had the opportunity. And so it was like all these new people. I had no idea like the talent that was down here too.
Well, I didn't realize it was so competitive. I didn't realize the audition process was
was crazy.
Crazy like
It was like cattle call. It almost felt like auditioning for something in New York for a big musical or something, because it was just so many people. It was a bit overwhelming at first.
Wow. That is incredible.
Yeah. Like,
that's wild.
Way to go, Evermore, for getting the word out.
Well done for you. Nice job. Way to do it to beat out the crowd.
Were you originally going for... I mean, how does the audition process work, if you wouldn't mind kind of walking us through that?
No. So what we ended up doing is we all kind of showed up. They ran us through a bunch of different kinds of scenarios and exercises just to kind of see how well we play with each other. And so that was kind of interesting, is I started realizing, oh, they're looking for chemistry. And so they're trying to see how all of us interact. And that was really fun. Christian actually ran us through some pretty interesting scenarios. And I knew Christian because of kind of his local fame. He did like a Fruit Ninja video forever ago. And I love that thing. And so I was like, I want to work with this guy, because this guy just looks like he has a lot of fun. And to see him in there, part of casting, that was amazing. And after they did that, they kind of ran us through probably, oh man, it had to be about an hour, almost hour and a half. And then they put us in like groups of eight, and we had to go in just like traditional casting. At the point where the casting table was there, they'd hand us a side, they'd ask us to read the side, Lucas was there, and Lucas handed me my side, and he said, "Can you do this in like a gypsy accent?" And I was like, "Roma, Romanian, Bulgarian, like," and he's like, "Romanian." And I was like, "Oh, of course, absolutely." Right. And so it was this interesting little piece about like putting your hand in France. They have that the mouth, right, where you put your hand in and to check your fear. And so it was this whole character, which I didn't even know at the time was the idea of Giordani before they even had really fully created what they wanted Giordani to be. And I think in that moment they were like, yep, there's our fortune teller.
Got him.
And that's what they didn't know is that I've actually, when I was much younger, I was a runaway when I was a teenager. And so I grew up kind of during that time I was living on the streets and stuff. And that's how I ended up learning how to read cards. Is and that's a whole other story. I don't know if you guys want to hear that one.
Oh, so definitely
want to hear that.
We'll come back to that one.
I think we have a couple questions about the cards.
Yeah, yeah. And so then that's and so I've been reading ever since I was a teenager, and I've actually played gypsy characters like about every 5 to 6 years. Someone usually approaches me to play some kind of fortune teller. And I was like, oh great, here we go again. I'm gonna be another fortune teller. But little did I know,
it
would be the greatest fortune teller I've ever played.
Certainly our favorite, that's for sure.
I love, I mean, and to be able to play a character like that, like I've mainly cast as villains almost, or an antagonist in everything that I've played for decades. And to be able to play kind of this fun, loving kind of bon vivant kind of character, I was like, yeah, I'm there.
Let's do it. Yeah. That's so great. So great. Oh my goodness. So many questions here.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And now he's kind of opened up the can of worms. I don't know what to start on.
But just kind of your background as an actor, and we'll come to the cards and everything a little bit later, but how much experience, it sounds like you have a lot of experience. I don't personally have any experience. So kind of some of those words and whatnot, I can kind of assume, but what's your background as an actor, and how is that different from acting as an Evermore character? Man.
So classically trained. So cut my teeth mainly in theater with Shakespeare, a lot of Shakespeare early in my teens and 20s. There wasn't a lot of roles for someone of my ethnicity, and most people would not want to cast me for things like me in The Crucible. Just doesn't make sense unless I'm Tituba, which that's a weird call too. So a lot of theater at that time was very Caucasian driven stories. And so it was occasionally I would get like a Langston Hughes play which was funny because I was in Tambourine Sir Glory and I got cast as an Irish cop. And so I was just like, okay, so we have all this ethnicity, but yet now I'm going to play a Caucasian. So, okay.
All right.
And so, and that was mainly a lot of it. A lot of my background's theater. I studied with using Meisner technique for two of the intensives for a little while. I didn't finish the third one. I think I had got what I needed from it. And then I studied with Chubbuck, kind of going over The Power of the Actor, which I think is an absolutely brilliant book. Minus one chapter in there, just because I just don't agree with that technique. Right. And then what I realized is you kind of need a toolbox as an actor, and you have to know which tool to use in the right moment, in the right time. I'd also, in the early 90s, I was helping with the development of a gaming company at the time called White Wolf Studios, and they were creating Vampire the Masquerade. And in Vampire the Masquerade.
That's how I know that one.
Yeah. And so Vampire the Masquerade, they had released this box set for a LARP. And this is like no one knew what LARP was then. And so we went crazy with it. We had a LARP in our city that was like 200 to 300 players.
Oh my goodness.
Golly.
We then coordinated. We then, you know, very much as like the need, right? And so we then started finding out like Montgomery, Alabama had a group, Memphis, Tennessee had a group, Knoxville, Tennessee had a group. And so we started through conventions, we were all meeting each other, and we started coordinating this massive whole Southeastern thing that was called the International Conclave Convention, which is now international. It's actually international now. Right. And then it was just like, it's just a bunch of crazy Southerners down there.
Yeah. Calling in international.
Trying to pretend we're international. Yeah. And so it was great. And a lot of the stuff that we were working on and developing then, I think really prepared me a lot for what I was walking into Evermore, because Evermore is a beast. It's so different than anything an actor ever has to ever do.
And I think, why is that? Why is the difference there? I'm sure there are millions of reasons.
Yeah, because like, okay, so in a play, in a film, in anything that's scripted, you know everything that your character knows.
Right.
Unless you're one of those actors. They're like, no, I only need to know the page I'm doing today. But you can either approach it part whole or whole part. I do whole part because I like to know the beginning, the end, and the middle, where my character is at certain points, the opinions of other people of my character in those different phases. Evermore, you don't know. You know, because each night your interactions can steer the story into other directions. And the World Walkers have such a huge impact on how that's being kind of driven. And being in dialect for our first season, it was like I was doing like a almost 9-hour day, 5-6 days a week for first season of Lore. And I was not prepared. I was not prepared to stay in dialect that long. It's so much that then, like, I was dreaming in dialect. I was talking in my sleep in dialect. I yelled at my cats in dialect. So I was like, Loki, what did you do? You know, like, you know, so I was just like, well, I don't know. It was crazy. And so that was just that was such a crazy thing. Like, I never... And for that long, and now here it is a year of playing the same character. Sometimes it's like, where do I turn it off?
Right.
Like, I can turn off the character, but the accent is just so, it's actually easier to speak as the character than it is as myself.
That
and
is
so
cool.
It's very weird. Yeah.
At that point, it's kind of like, what do I actually sound like?
Yeah.
Like, for doing it so long.
Well, and I've changed my accent a lot. I grew up in the Deep South. I grew up with very backwoods kind of swampy, rednecky kind of family and stuff. And then consciously in my teens, changed my accent to do more radio stuff, like just, you know, music,
right?
Radio, like disc jockey stuff. And you have to have a certain voice for that, right? And so, and I had to work that my Southern accent out to the point that other Southerners go, "You're not from here," and I'm like, "Yeah, I am.
Yeah,
I grew up here.
Was raised over there. Thanks."
Yeah. And it's like, you know, that really, really backwoods place that no one else knows except locals. That's where I'm from. Yeah,
that's me. Right.
That's impressive.
Mm-hmm. Very impressive.
That's awesome.
It's crazy.
And so you've started and you have been working on as a kind of with your voice for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I personally have always found it super interesting, voice actors and everything. Like, how do you get started? How does that even happen? I mean,
I think, you know, just being a kid, like, I did a lot of imitation and like mimicking things. Mm-hmm. And I think the advantage for me is like, I have an Asian mother, I have a Southern redneck father, you know, and then there's so much of this, like, I had like an uncle from Philly, mm-hmm. you know, and so I would imitate my family members a lot. Just kind of like two of my other like cousins and my sibling, my sister. And, you know, we just laugh because I'd be, you know, making fun of the adults around us. And then that just kind of grew from to that, to like cartoon characters and things like that. And I never, you know, I never thought anything would ever come of it. Even in my teens, I'd like let go of a lot of that. I'd do a lot of impressions of comedians. And I stole so many comedians' jokes by watching Evening at the Improv and right. stuff like that. And that's where I began to learn like comedic timing and all those things that I didn't even realize I was learning those like social cues and how to do that until way later
right.
in life. Like right. I was like, after college, I was like, oh yeah, I've been doing this like my whole life.
I actually know how to do this.
Yeah.
That sounds really cool.
That's why I've been successful.
So to kind of put a number on it, I mean, how many voices, how many accents can you do?
Oh,
and also, do you speak other languages? Like what?
So my French is umpu. I did Latin and French. I did 2 years of French in high school. I did a year of Latin in high school. And what I learned is that I did Latin before I did French. And Latin has helped me with all the Romance languages. Mm-hmm. And so even when I moved out here, I'd never spoken Spanish or been really exposed to Spanish until I moved out west. And coming out here, I started reading signs. And I was like, wait, how do I know how to read this language that I've never read or right. seen before? And I was like, oh, Latin, yes.
Got it.
Yeah, that's where it's coming from. And French, of course, helps a little bit. With French on Duolingo, I'm a level 20, if that means anything, out of like 25. Not as conversational as I would like, but it's really tough to be immersed in French language in Utah.
Right. Yeah.
Very that difficult. Like that's I should be working on Spanish. I play a lot of Spanish and Hispanic characters. And so, usually what I end up doing, because it's scripted, it's so easy to note like how I should say this vowel or how I should say this word. So I can even write out phonetically what I'm saying and how I should say it. And then usually what I bring in is like a dialect coach to help me, which is just like one of my Hispanic friends or something like that. Right. Who's either in theater or just a friend of mine to kind of help me get it right. Because it's very different too. Like Mexican Spanish is different from like Puerto Rican
right.
or Cuban or, you know, and so I didn't even realize that. And I was like, right. oh yeah, well they have accents too, of course. Yeah.
Right. That's so cool.
Yeah. And so dialect wise or accent wise, I've done so many. It's weird because it's like I kind of have to either rehearse or train myself to get into the accent. And so usually you'll have like a phrase or something that you say. And if you say the phrase, it's the right thing. Like my New York one is like, I never want to leave this park in my entire life. Right. A park. And so it's like, it triggers and so you can get into that kind of dialect, you know, where you're it's like, oh, but what part of New York am I from? Am I from Long Island, which this could kind of be a little more Long Island but maybe a little faster, or I'm from Queens where I'm a little more nasally and like everything I'm saying is like, oi, I just don't know what I'm doing, you know? Yeah, you know, or I'm from Manhattan where everything is very fast and everything is like we're in a hurry and we gotta go and you can barely hear a little bit of the accent in there, or from the Bronx where it's like, oh, you know, I'm working on the docks and I'm trying to do some stuff. Yeah. And so it's I love doing the New York because I have having family up there, like really seeing like how borough to borough, which is so bizarre to me that you're just blocks away.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like a different country.
Right.
Almost.
So much history and so much. A culture involved in those dialects and
absolutely. And you want to pay, you want to be respectful too. Like I, in no way do I want to be making fun of it. I want to be honoring it. I've done Lebanese, Egyptian, which was interesting because the Lebanese, when I was learning to do a Lebanese accent, I had actual guys on the Utah campus that were from Lebanon, and they wanted to hear it. And I was like, hey guys, you mind if I try my accent on you? So I started talking and they started laughing so hard, and they're like, no, you're Egyptian, you sound so Egyptian. And I was like, well, help me. And like, so every night after this rehearsal, I was working on a play during the time called Ruin, this amazing Pulitzer Prize winning play by Lynn Nottage, and I play such a slimy character in this. and I wanted to do them justice. And so every night that I would leave rehearsals, I'd cross these guys at this like frat, and it was a frat for these Middle Eastern guys. And they'd be outside, they'd have a big hookah and everything, and they'd have like this mound of rice, and they'd like, come, Bobby, come on, you know? And it was just awesome. It was, I felt blessed in that moment because I was trying to find that dialect and the accent so desperately, you know? And then just, boom, there it is.
There they like are.
My walk to the train, those guys just happened to be on that path.
Oh, that's so great.
Serendipitous happens to me quite a bit. I think a lot of people hate me for it. Yeah. It was like, oh, just fell in your lap.
Just fell in your lap. Looks like kind of Giordani tied to the fates and the everything, but so is Bobby there.
Yeah. Well, the fates like me, they're not too fond of Giordani.
There you go.
Speaking of the fates, you mentioned card reading growing up, and you were learning that process. How intricate is that process? How long did it take you to learn how to read cards and how to read people in a sense?
In the beginning, I did read people. I don't do that anymore. I try not to. That's even why. So it's evolved over time, but let's see. Now I got to figure out age. 35 years. So 35 years I've been doing it.
Wow.
It was really difficult in the beginning because I learned tarot first, and tarot's 78 cards. Each of the cards have a upright and a reverse meaning. And each of those meanings could be anywhere from 30 to 40 meanings for the upright to the reverse. So you're looking at 80 possibilities for every card. And it was too much. Mm-hmm. My wife helped me a lot to her interest in it and her need to, she's kind of brilliant in the way that she always tries to figure out the formula of everything. I'm married to like this wonderfully nerdy science girl who believes in universal theory and that anything can be turned into a formula. And so we begin breaking it down. Like, really, what is the, and then as you test it every day, we started going through the process of eliminating, like, no, it doesn't mean that, doesn't mean that. And so we kind of got it down to the core of what the cards are. And then you find the right imagery that fits that interpretation. Because you can see the story in the image rather than start trying to remember all this.
Right.
And then it becomes about how do you present this? You know, yeah, sure, I could read the book interpretation, but how do I apply it to the person that's in front of me? And so there's a little bit of, I don't know if you'd call it like a bedside manner or something like that, you know? So, and I've done a lot of different things from runes. Runes don't take too long. They're not very complex. How they fall is important, but like the actual individual meanings is not as much. It's more of where it falls. And that's a lot of things people don't even understand is like a quadrant. And so depending on where they hit in that quadrant will determine like what the warrior means for you in this particular aspect. And then with Evermore, I've never done fortune cards before. Again, credit to my wife. She's like, I said, I really want a cool set of cards, but I want, because lore was very dark, not for the fact of the story or the season, just because we didn't have a lot of lights.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, I need big cards, kind of big cards with big images, at least that people, even in the dark or low light, they can still see. And so she went crazy Googling and she's like, I found these cards and I fell in love with them. And so I started working with them. I'm like, well, first off, fortune cards, these fortune cards, there's only 48. So that's 30 less cards I have to memorize.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then it was just amazing. Like, they're so intuitive. Like, I've never experienced, like, even with reading tarot can get very creepily specific. Mm-hmm. And these cards, like, almost without effort, bring out that level of specificity. I hate that word.
Exactly. You nailed it way better than we could.
Yeah, and so Evermore is the first time I started using these cards.
Wow.
I don't think we would have noticed, because every time you've given us readings, we're like, man, how did he know?
Yeah.
How did he know?
Yeah,
they're like, so good. They really are. And I think a lot of it is the character, too. Like, if I try to do readings as Bobby, it's not quite as romantic or entertaining.
That is so, that actually quite blows my mind. So if I'm understanding you correctly, you're bringing at least some actual tarot reading, fortune reading? Is there a difference between the two, first and foremost?
Mostly, yeah. Okay. I mean, they still kind of follow the same principles and everything, but the cards are different.
Right.
The meanings of the cards are different, too.
So you're bringing actual, like, your background into this whole atmosphere and... Mm-hmm. To give these super accurate readings, I mean,
which was crazy. So for the people who were involved with Evermore, with me coming in as an actor, I was like, oh, that's crazy that you cast me as the fortune teller. I said, because I so happen to read tarot cards, and they're like, what? You know? And then I started doing readings for people, and they were like, whoa. Like, you're legit, you right. know, so like, they're
this
yeah,
is really cool.
It really freaked them out, in the beginning. And what I loved is, Mandy, who plays one of the she's played quite a few characters, in the park. When we did the FanX event, last year, so before the park even opened, she came to me. She was like kind of my first Evermore friend. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of lost. And she came up to me and she said, you're the fortune teller, right? And I was like, yeah. And she said, would it be weird if I said, yeah, I asked for a reading? She said, no. If I asked for my character to have a reading, and I was like, we can do that. And then she, as her character Marnie during the time, she yes. thought of a question yeah, for her. And then I laid the cards down and we were both blown away. We were like, oh my gosh, like, this is great. And so then before we knew it, lots of characters were like, do a reading for me. Like, I need a character reading. I don't even know what I'm doing with my character, you know? And so, and it was great. I think Lee was there too. And so I did one for Suds. And that was kind of our trifecta there. In the beginning, because I think we were the only three actors there that particular day, that first day at FanX, the Comic-Con thing. And it kind of solidified the bond between the three of us. And so we've all been very tight throughout the seasons.
That's so great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's actually something what we've seen, especially during Mythos, is Giordani and Dimitri and some of the other characters have even started doing more readings for other characters within the park.
Yeah.
Does that somewhat trace back to these kind of beginning moments?
Absolutely. Well, we then started realizing that we have to be careful who I read for. So I don't know if you guys were there, but during Aurora, Worldwalker said, you need to come and read for Wickham. And as I started reading for Wickham, there was a point where the actor or the character mm-hmm. was like, that's enough. Like, he had to stop me because it's too much story. Was being revealed. And he was like, okay, we need to stop. The night that I did the reading for Clara and for Suds, I brought my tarot cards that night. And the whole time I'm there, I'm shuffling the cards like, please just tell the story. Please just tell the story. Like, in my head, right. I'm like, please just, because I don't preset anything. I just let the cards do whatever they want to do.
This is so much fun.
Yeah. Hold on. And that's the fun of it.
You're telling me that, like, for those tableau moments Absolutely. Where we're all standing around watching.
Yep.
Those are not preset decks.
No, not at all. Everything is right there in the moment. It absolutely is, which is what blows most people's minds.
Yeah, that's kind of freaky.
Yeah. Yeah, so we as the cast, after every night that I do those kinds of readings, like when we are getting out of wardrobe and getting out of makeup, everyone's just like, oh my God, like they're freaking out. Like, like, how did your cards keep doing it? You know?
Like, I don't know.
It's like, exactly. Yeah, I was like, well, they're going to tell the story that needs to be told. What was so crazy is, like, if you could go back and actually look at that reading from Lore, it actually sets up everything even till now.
No, it does not.
Yeah. It really is crazy because I did a massive spread. I did like 15 card spread for Suds then. And the first part was just mainly talking about Fergus and right. all of that stuff. And then it got into more current where it was talking about how to win her hand in marriage. But then it also got into... Here are going to be the repercussions.
Oh my goodness!
And it's during that season that the wolf in sheep's the wolf among us is and the wolf in sheep's clothing appeared, all the way back in Lore, and so it's been carried on. It's been carried on throughout all the seasons.
So this is something that we've had. We know a little bit of kind of the inner workings of the park and how the way in which you have told a story and everything has changed. I believe. But that is amazing to hear that I obviously don't know how much, but that there are at least some elements that started way back in lore.
Yeah.
You were telling us that the idea for even your Dimitri character.
Oh yeah.
Way back in lore.
Absolutely.
That has always been his name, and that you've had these.
It was crazy because so Romanian is what they wanted, like Hungarian Romanian. Right. And so I began working that dialect very, very hard. But then I was like, I want to keep this job. And if I'm a spooky, creepy fortune teller, like people won't want to approach me other than just to get their fortune read. And so I think it was like our third rehearsal. They did a round robin kind of thing where it's like, all right, we're going to go around and you're going to stand up and you're going to say your character name in your preferred accent and introduce yourself. And so the whole time I'm waiting, I'm like, okay, all right. And then I stand up and then French comes out. And I was like, I am Jordani. And I said, I am the king of the gypsies. And then I sat down. I was like, why did I say it in French? I was like, okay, well, I kind of just trusted it. I trusted it in that moment. I was like, well, there's a reason why that came out instead of what I had been rehearsing for like 2-3 weeks up to that point just to prepare for it. And so I was like, okay, he's French apparently. And now let's try and explain that. And why waste all my work on this Romanian? And so thus the Demetrius Giordani was born.
Love that.
It's we were commenting even like the Giordani and Dimitri switch where you're kind of mixing the accents through us for a loop. Like we were like, oh, it's just so subtle. It's just so subtle. And Bobby just has such a mastery of the dialects that it's so hard to determine. Is he Dimitri right now? Or is he Giordani? Or is he Dimitri pretending to be Giordani? We had no idea.
Well, the fun thing, too, is that Giordani can't do an imitation of Dimitri, but Dimitri does an imitation of Giordani.
Yeah.
That has been something as frequent goers, and you know, we've really been enjoying looking for that, but I'm sure that's something really cool for people who don't go as often when they get one accent that's different and they're like, wait, what? I'm so confused.
Yeah.
And then going on the Facebook pages and whatnot, actually seeing why that was or digging into that. I think that's been an excellent way to get people into that deeper story, like we've talked about.
Yeah, it's crazy too, because like we had some characters in lore that were kind of like that were torn, and I was so terrified of playing a character, like bringing that forward with my character, that I started having doubts in Aurora, like maybe no one really knows enough about me. Maybe we can change some things, you know.
Right.
But I was like, no, there's stuff out there, so just let it be. Maybe nothing will ever happen with it.
Right.
And then here comes Mythos.
And here it is.
Yeah, and here it is right now.
Yeah.
That's so amazing. Kind of talking about, I know there are multiple characters and whatnot with Suds and a couple other characters that have been the returning ones every season. Mm-hmm. You actually were the only gypsy or fortune teller that has remained.
Right.
Which
is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, we loved those characters during lore, and we hope that we at least see some of them come back.
Yeah. Cat and Penny were amazing.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Huge shout out to those girls. Because, like, story wise, I had lost my Campania. And so it was really cool to, like, be making a new Campania in that moment. And them, like, knowing, like, well, Cat, especially knowing, like, that Giordani is a little different. And so it was really fun to play with. Whereas Penny was clueless, and then we kept her kind of clueless. So great.
But what has your experience been with Evermore? I mean, returning as the same character, has that been something that you've been really excited to?
No, I was so disappointed. Like, as an actor, like, you just want to embody as much of many different characters as you can. It's like, let me show you my range, you know? I think I was just being spoiled, you know? I was like, I already played this character, and I was trapped in a tent most of lore.
Yeah, with a quite long line.
Yeah, it was insane.
You could not. No. There was one point when we were like, hey, we want our cards read. And you were like, okay, but I have to use the restroom.
I know. Like, that was a crazy thing. I couldn't even.
Oh, come on. Come on. You don't be human right now. Just be with us.
If they gave me like a little canteen behind there, I probably would have. I was so hardcore about it. And it was funny, too, because like Cammy and Chris, they were kind of like our watchers and our handlers. Right. And they get on to me. They're like, you have to take a break. You have to break. And I was just like, but the line is, it never ends. So I feel bad.
Right.
Like everyone right. paid money to come and experience this. I'm going to give them the experience. And then, you know, there's a point where you
have to be a person.
And they tried figuring out everything. They gave me a sign to put down that didn't work. Right. They had other characters, emergency pull me out. You know, I think the guy. Goblins pulled me out like, oh no, there's trouble.
Right.
You know, the fairies were like, help us, Jardani. Yeah. And like, it was like, this is just me going to the bathroom.
Right. And then mm-hmm. the crowd would just follow you. Right. And then they just follow you.
A lot of them would until I went into our like little hidden right. tents. And then I would have people like waiting for me to come out of the tent. Yeah.
I'm not going to say that we didn't.
We might have been one of those people
because there were times.
It's cool to play a character that's like that wanted.
Right.
Yeah.
There were times when we would be like, hey, he's the only one that has this information or whatnot on a quest line, but we also don't want to wait for 45 minutes.
Or oh, yeah, because I was the Blackheart finale, and then I ended up becoming the Knight's finale, too.
Right, and that was interesting in its own right, but just having you there, and then we would see you going past us just alone. We're like, we have to get him. We have to corner him, and we apologize right now if we've ever done that to anyone else, just so you know, because we have
done that,
unfortunately, and hopefully we haven't come off.
It was so different in lore, too, right. because we were stationed. We didn't have a lot of roaming right. area. We weren't free to do, which I'm so grateful that during Aurora, they opened it up more. And now for Mythos, I just absolutely, for my character, I can't speak for everyone else's right. character, but being a roaming character now is so much more rewarding than being stuck in a tent right. with 100 people waiting to see yes. you.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And we've also seen that with having individual conversations with about other things other than just our fortune, right? It seemed like, especially during lore, that's kind of what your main thing was just the fortunes. And I'm sure you get that a lot even still.
Yeah,
people coming and
I make them work for it now. Back then I was just like, no, everyone gets a free reading, you right. know. We didn't even have currency during lore.
Yes,
when we went into lore, the idea was it was supposed to be this linear thing, and we tried it, and then that kind of fell apart.
Right,
right,
because clearly people wanted, and even when we were in rehearsal, we were like, we should be doing this more free, not everything being kind of forced into following A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you know. But, you know, we were at the time, we're at the mercy of the powers that be. And so we did what they wanted, and that ended up kind of not working. Because, you know, the fans, some of the World Walkers wanted what they want. There was like bells of hay that they moved out of the way so they could just like start free roaming. They're like, I don't want to do that.
I think we did that.
Yeah.
We didn't move any out of the way, but we definitely stepped
over them. Yeah, yeah. I watched that happen a lot. And I'm like, I don't want to go through the haunt, but I want to go play with the characters.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's
it's different for everyone.
It is.
There's some people who definitely want to do the haunts. But during that time, it seemed like, we already did it. So let's go and see what else the park has to offer.
Maybe could you give us a couple of tips for World Walkers as they come and talk to characters? Like, what are some things that
engage?
Engage.
Big time. Like, my biggest thing is, I know it's tough because all of us can be a little socially awkward, especially in this day and age, where it's easier just to talk through our phones than to the person next to us. But it's one of those things. It's like, you guys say it a lot too. Like, you know, what you put in is what you get back,
right.
you know, and I've even kind of, I was saying that kind of during lore as well, especially during Aurora, I kind of serve more as like a tutorial during Aurora. It's like, come to the tavern, and then I'd give them the spiel, you know. And I remember talking about, oh, well, what you have here is more of like the appetizers, so the scavenger hunts and stuff like this. This will kind of get you into it. And I said, but the real meal is talking to us, engaging right. us, and asking us, like, you know, more than just like, do you have gold for me? You know, which yeah. became a huge annoyance for a lot of us. It was just like, because people would just come up and not even like, no social interaction other than like, hey, I want gold, you know, hey, give me silver, you know. And so we were like, oh, are you robbing me? I would spin it all kinds of ways, but some actors got very frustrated by that. And even some actors got frustrated with being like, hey, you have a quest, you know. Right. It's like, but we are kind of in a video game, right? You know,
yeah, so it's this weird boundary mm-hmm. to walk on,
right? And it's tough because a lot of us didn't know what to expect, you know. And many of them come from a theater background, and in theater, again, you know all the things that your character is going to happen to your character, what's going to, and being so free like that in this improvisational kind of setting that's still guided for an actor as seasoned as me, it's difficult. When I realize that, oh wow, I'm starting to break, I then think about all these poor other new actors yeah. who are like, oh, they probably shattered long ago, you know. I'm like, ah, I should have turned around and reached a hand. I'm like, hey, I could help you. And so it's kind of crazy. It definitely is.
I just, as someone who goes, you know, sometimes we often forget that you are not just an NPC,
yeah,
and that you are there for, that you have hopes and dreams and a backstory that you as an actor have created and thought about for,
oh absolutely,
so long. I'm sure,
man, it's so many layers, like just talking with the other actors and the characters, like you just kind of get lost,
right?
I have a fun time being a character in the story, learning about the other characters in the story. Because the brilliance of Sherry and Shipley is that they kind of, it's about discovery. And so even as our characters, we have to discover the new citizens, the new people who come through the portal, and determine, you know, some of us, like in particular, there's certain characters like Aiden and Kaderan. There's some of the Eternals, right? As yes. we kind of jokingly call those characters, where we've all been friends for like millennia, you know? And right. so there's those moments where the three of us have gotten together and going, okay, so where did it all begin with right. us, you know? Yeah. And then, you know, but then you have the pig farmer, you know, who is like, do I really care about the pig farmer? And then you start to find out like, oh no, he's got this whole crazy story too that's going on with him, you know, which could just be simply as simple as, you know, getting his wife an anniversary present or something like that.
I always thought it was interesting because every time I go to the park, I'll go up to a character and say, hey, how can I help you out? Like, what's something I can do? And usually they'll send me on a quest to go get information from another character. Like, hey, go tell me what their deal is, or go tell me what they're up to. I never had thought that they were actually like inquisitive about that person.
Yeah.
I usually thought I was like, oh, they already know.
Yeah.
Because they all know each other. Yeah. Duh. But I have never heard of that before.
Yeah, even in rehearsal, like we get a surface level. And of course, as we're all developing throughout the story, you start finding your character through rehearsal, even through the first couple of weeks of performance. You're still trying to like find that right space. But yeah, I mean, if you came through Mythos this time, like Knackle, Briar, I don't know any of those characters. And have I yet to actually interact with them as their characters? And so I have to find out too, which makes it fun. So I'm playing too. Like, that's what I think is the discovery of it is so cool, because it's like, yeah, I may have to be doing this kind of monotonous kind of rote action, you know, by serving as a certain quest point. But there's wonderful ways to weave it in to find out more about others. And a lot of us who've been there for three seasons now, we've expanded even further on that, where we have our own little secret societies who get this information for us now. And so we're really learning to use the World Walkers a lot better.
That's super interesting. I never thought of it like that. That's wild. That makes me super happy.
Yeah, I like hearing that the World Walkers are so much a part of this whole process. You talked about them creating the story and also
so much
interacting with the characters, mm-hmm. whereas sometimes that doesn't happen unless it's like a tableau or something.
Right. And the tableaus are just kind of these story events that happen more like plot points.
Right.
But the Worldwalkers influence how those go too. Even I thought it was interesting that when my character was being poisoned, about to be poisoned, that so many Worldwalkers came running up going, "Don't drink it, don't drink it, don't drink it, don't drink it." You know, it was great because like now Worldwalkers are starting to get it at the point like, oh, we can engage. Like right. We can, like, I care about this character. I'm going to say, if I know this character's life is in danger, I'm going to save them.
Right.
And that blew my mind. And I was like, how do I play with that?
Right. How do you?
Because I know what has to happen.
Right.
Yeah, you have to disregard that because you know what has to happen.
Or select kind of what to go with and what not
and
to.
And playing to it is so much more fun. But it's not always easy. Like our motto is yes and.
Right.
Or no but. You know, so we don't want ever have red herrings or dead ends for Worldwalkers because it's just a waste of everyone's time. And so it's like, how do we always keep the story going? And it's crazy because you never know where the story is going in a lot of ways.
Yeah, definitely.
You're like, oh, that point, we're going to try and get there. And then it's like, I'm making all kinds of weird gestures so you guys can't see.
But maybe that goes into a question that I kind of wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
The idea of the story kind of going everywhere and Worldwalkers just kind of throwing a TNT into it. just this San Diego Comic-Con, Lee Liston said something interesting where he was saying you and him got together and came up with the idea for the mayoral election.
Yeah, during Aurora. Yeah.
And that you guys kind of invented this concept and introduced it in Mythos. I wanted to see, like, how has it gone from your idea and where is it now and how far is it off of what you thought it was going to be?
Oh, it's so crazy. So in Aurora, we were just like, what do we do? It's not because Lee and I think we were so used to kind of being a little more in the spotlight during lore, especially him with the Clara story and with the Blackhearts being right there in the tavern. There was a lot of story in that area. During Aurora, we were just like, well, we're just two tavern owners with nothing to do except deal with these weird Auroran people who seem to be like too happy. And so we're like, how do we do? And so we started exploring all kinds of stuff. Like, what? Well, we're only limited to our space. And so we started doing like the acting where we were actors playing characters who wanted to be actors but were bad at being actors. And so it was Inception. And so that was really fun because we were basically doing what the acting troupe does now, which they do it so much better. And ours was just more of was just a need to fill space. And those checklists, we started getting really frustrated with how much the tavern was being congested from everyone waiting to get their one little check mark, you know? And so it was like, what's a way we could do it? And it's just a necessity. A lot of it is like, how do we get them to check 5-8 checks off by doing one little show and then send them all out to everyone else in the park? And so that's how that came to be. And then it was during that moment where I was just like, you know what? These Aurorans are invading our home. They say they're here for peace, but they've brought armies and generals. That doesn't sound like peace to me. And Lee was agreeing, or Suds was agreeing. And I was like, we need law and order in this town. We need a leader. And I was like, you should be mayor. And I was like, I'll vote for you for mayor. Who better for mayor than the heart of Evermore, right? And so that was a lot of fun of that idea, but then the idea is just like hit the wall and slid off. And so I didn't think anything was ever going to happen of it. Then Lee pitched it again, I guess, during Mythos, and it just kind of took off. Yeah. Now Mallory is has been mainly in charge of doing that.
Has the outcome been different from what you originally thought? Like, was it supposed to be all of these characters?
Like yeah. anyone could jump into
that
the election?
That was what was crazy. Like, for me originally, I was like only Evermorians. Like, right. like even Jordani is not from Evermore. So I was like, I wouldn't even be a part of that. And so, yeah, that's what I was thinking initially is let's just keep it very centric to the citizens of Evermore. I wasn't expecting for World Walkers to come in and be able to vote for anyone, right. you know, the Corn over in, is now running for mayor, you know? And so, but what's fun about that is then I then turned around when Dimitri was born, I then turned around and said, ooh, Dimitri running for mayor.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I won mayor, there was no way they could stop me, you right. know? But they killed me too fast anyway.
And that really, the creative part sounds like some of the hardest but most rewarding of Evermore, that it really is you all coming together, proposing an idea, and having the participants, the World Walkers, and the writing and staff and everything go all in together to create this amazing thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, from emails to face-to-face meetings to, you know, text messaging to we have our own groups in social media where it's just private for us and that we go through. There's so much that's being generated. And then also like following you guys, following social media and stuff. It's kind of seeing what the buzz is, laughing about a lot of the predictions and theories, which are just great. Great. I love looking at the spoiler and theories and going, wow. And then there's moments where you're like, ooh.
Ooh, they are onto something.
Someone's getting close. Yeah. Yeah. So it's really cool. It's like exciting all together. And then like how to cater to that, you know, right. It's like, well, I didn't start playing my character as a bad guy, but everyone seems to think of him as a bad guy, you know? Right. So now I have to make some changes. And so I think that helps with the performances as well.
Amazing, amazing. Going along that point of that Evermore World Walkers participants can affect and change the story.
Yes.
You were saying that oftentimes you will have a place that you're trying to get to, but that the World Walkers can change the story. Is that
Absolutely.
Correct?
Absolutely.
Kind of how much would you, I mean, the whole story and the whole acting process, it's been to explain to us that it is improv. Almost 100%. Would you agree? Or 75?
Yeah, I'd probably go maybe like 75, 80% okay. is improv for some actors.
Right.
Some actors, 100%. You know, so there are just certain nights. It depends. Like, it really depends on the night because, like, there are key actors that will be pulled aside moments before show. And be given some like top secrets
and
stuff.
That has to be frustrating, amazing, and very like difficult. Every emotion wrapped into it when you're just pulled aside moments before and you're like, all right, okay. I got to do this now.
Yeah, I had like a huge thing dropped on me like as I was walking down the hall to exit into the park. And it was like, oh, by the way. And I was like, really? It's like, okay. And so sometimes it can, and then you're processing, right? You're then like, oh gosh, like how am I going to do this? And so it's weird because we don't get that kind of rehearsal. And so if you were able to take the actor and, you know, have a good 4 or 5 hour rehearsal for a particular tableau or scene or anything that you're doing, you can work out the fact that it's a rehearsal and it starts to be natural. In order to maintain this sense of organic naturalness that's in our performances, we have to kind of be shocked and surprised by the information as it's being delivered to right. us, or not have as much time to process it. So you're very much in the moment, which I love, because that's something that's very difficult for actors. When you say be in the moment, a lot of them are like, oh, just in the scene. Is like, no, so in the moment that you don't even realize you're performing a scene, that right. you don't even realize that there's cameras and all this stuff around you. And that's what happens for me. Every time we get in these like tableaus and these intense character moments, it's like tunnel vision. And so I only see the person I'm interacting with. I actually have to turn. And so a good example was in the bar, in the tavern, when Dimitri reveals himself to Suds, and then he forces Jordani to talk to Suds.
That was
we saw
an
that
intense
one
moment.
It's just me and Lee in that moment, I didn't even realize that most of the people were there until I turned. And then what was crazy to me is like Shipley is in there, you know, he's over by the piano, and it barely even registered as I pivoted out. And so you get very locked into what you're doing that you just kind of, everyone else kind of disappears in the moment. And it's crazy. Like you, and it helps being able to trust your scene partner. I think that's the biggest thing is the trust that is between actors and just like, hey, we'll go wherever we need to go in this moment. I had a moment with Kalairi this past weekend where, you know, she was just standing in my way and I needed to get to the stairs. And then it turned into this whole ordeal that I was not expecting to happen in that moment.
I don't think we caught that one.
We did catch that one, and I'm really mad now. I really wanted to see that one.
Yeah, it was so crazy. And she was just initiating nights. So she had all these nights, and she was just like, you know, go around. And I was like, you're seriously, take a step, a foot to the left or right, just and I can walk past you.
Please.
But she wouldn't let me pass. And so I got very upset with her, and I was like, this is what I think of the nights. And I like dumped my absinthe, right. Poured it out. But like, you know, like right there. And then I walked around them. There's going to be repercussions
because of that.
Yeah.
Amazing,
and that happened there. That just happened in the moment.
Performance.
Mm-hmm. And so me and Bryn now have to think about like, what does that mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then we talk with the writers and stuff. I was like, well, here's what we think it kind of means. What do you guys think? And they usually go, ooh, you know, like they love like any kinds of crazy stuff.
This, like, because of how difficult and all encompassing it really is, you guys probably live, drink, breathe Evermore all the time.
It feels like it.
And that has to be at least some sort of...
It's pretty annoying to our friends and family, I think.
Going, we have experienced part of that as well. Just being obsessed with it and being fans. Everyone at... Skylar and I work together. And everyone at our work knows about Evermore and talks about it or makes fun of us of how often we talk about it and yell about it.
Probably most of them have never been.
Successfully gotten one or two people, mm-hmm. and we're planning on bringing a whole bunch of them. So
it's one of those weird things, like you get really excited about it, and then like I got super excited about it and during Lore, and I invited a whole bunch of my friends that my gaming group, you know. I was like, oh man, like some of them used to LARP, some of them have played tabletop. We've been playing D&D forever, Pathfinder specifically. They came to the park and they had the worst experience that they could have, so bad that they refused to ever come back, you know. And so it's like, how do we save them, you know? Right. It was just in a different place at this time. We were trying, that was the night with a different cast, you know, come, you right. know, and it was, that was the final night of Lore. And so they came, they waited till the end to come. And then like, luckily one of them said, no, I'm going to give it another chance.
Right.
And now she's crazy obsessed.
And we see her all the time and quite enjoy
Which
her
I
friendship.
Love, I yeah. love.
Kind of going back a tiny bit, so many
you're fine.
Venues that I want to explore.
We'll run out of time is what'll happen.
Sadly. Just kind of going back as far as the interactions with the World Walkers, how do you choose how much information to give them? You have so much information that you have on your character, on the whole story,
mm-hmm.
and they may have asked a question that has either a lot to do with that portion that you have or none at all.
Yeah.
Right. How do you choose how much information and what information to give them?
Carefully. It's like a tightrope in a lot of ways. Like right. every night, this is part of the reason I think why the writers don't reveal a lot of plot to us, and so that's why they do these like, okay, you get 15 minutes before the show, we're going to drop a bomb on you of what you've got to accomplish tonight. Good luck, and they shove us out the door. In Lore, a lot of us knew the overall arcing story for the season, and there's some things that we call red level, and there were some red level things that were out of in the park within the first week. And so we're like, whew. no. And then it's easy to track it down. And so you find out who the culprits are. And then you start realizing that, oh, we have to be very, very careful with this. And then Aurora, it wasn't as bad because they had just a very, like a handful of actors who even were showcased most of that season. Whereas now for Mythos, I think limiting us a lot of what we know about where things are going and how it's getting there helps a lot. But it's also super frustrating to the actors.
Right.
Because they're just like, I just want to know, you know. And it was like, we all do. But we're again, it goes back to that discovery is like, part of it is, no, our characters have to learn it. And so that's in while we're in park, you really have to learn it. And if you can't, if you're stuck with a dragon attached to your arm, or if you're stuck, you know, over an archery or in a tent doing tarot readings,
right,
you have to use world walkers to go and get this information. And world walkers are not entirely reliable. Which is the best. Which I love. It's like the greatest game of grapevine, you know? It's so insane. It's like I tell one person one thing, and then by the end of the night, it is blown to this epic proportion of like, I just wanted to check and make sure they were okay and if they wanted anything to drink. Somehow it turned into I wanted them dead, and I bought a vial of poison from Rooster, and you know,
the worst game of telephone ever. So, but I mean, we have heard so many times that a lot of people think that it has to do with the question that they ask.
This like is true.
A key phrase that will unlock it. Is that true? I mean,
maybe for some actors. I mean, the actors kind of get to dictate how they want to disperse that information. If you ask the right questions, in a sense, I will begin kind of unraveling a little more. But then when you get very specific, that may shut me down.
Right.
You know, I'd be like, you're not ready for that. Right. You know, yeah, it's such a fine line. It's so difficult because like I know a lot and it's harder for me now being part of the writing team. Of limiting, yes. It's like, oh my gosh, because we were even talking about Aurora today, you know, and so it's just like so far ahead, and again, no one knows.
Right,
you're just saying you're charting your course, and how we get there. Well, the World Walkers will determine that, and we're just trying to make sure it steers kind of
somewhat,
kind of close.
We get there, yeah, eventually.
I don't know. It's also just fun. I mean, it depends. Like some people just want to blurt everything out.
Right.
But I think we're in this day and age where it's like this whole like immediate gratification and everything. It's not rewarding. And so when you have to like really spend some time and work to get that information, like I've even heard people, other world walkers is like, I've worked for 2 weeks to get this information. I'm not about let this one night world walker come up and take all the information that I've been gathering, you know?
We have felt that where it's like,
would you're protective. Yeah. Over it.
Yeah. We're like, no. Yeah. This is ours. We had to do so much for this.
We've been invited in the circle. You are not a part.
Yeah.
Won't you get out?
Yeah, just wait your turn.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is something we've talked about here on the podcast before. It's definitely a social etiquette stuff and also not knowing exactly how to do Evermore, right? That's something that we constantly are like, no, this is how it's done, or these are particular points that we need to.
Well, it's great because as world walkers, you kind of make your own rules.
Yeah.
You know,
I suppose that's true. Yeah. I've never thought about that.
Because there's some that are wallflowers. Absolutely. They're just there. I just want to observe. I'm going to go to the bird show, reptile show, stare at the pretty stuff. And yeah, there we go. 30 minutes. That's my night. You know, then you've got your first timers and your casuals, you know, like I'm here for the kids, you know, I'm just going to be a boring adult, but I'm going to let the kids have a fun time, you know. And then, of course, then there's like what I would say is kind of like the next level, which are like, oh, let's go do an adventure. Let's go find out what these guilds are about. And then there's the hardcore where it's just like, no, that answer is not good enough. There is something deeper at work. And they start to see each layer and what you put in is what you get out, you know, where it's like, wait, they changed the color of the blinds in that building. What does that mean? You know?
This is our group. Yeah. This is what we do.
It can get crazy like that. I think that's fun, though. Like, to me, that's the way. Like, I'm kind of a wallflower. I think I heard Skylar talk about it before, where he was talking about how initially he kind of let you guys do a lot of the socializing, and he just kind of watched and observed. But there's so much in that watching and observing where you're able to read them. You're able to see the shifts in the eyes of the actors. You're able to see that little lump in their throat, right, when they're trying to lie to you, you know, that you may not catch in that moment. It's I love it.
And it really does speak to the actors that they have that ability to telegraph those things.
Yes.
Right. We said it time and time again. The actors at Evermore really know what they're doing. They can give specific cues with their body language.
Amazing
with their
cast.
Eye movement, with everything that they've got. They're really incredible.
Just a phenomenal cast. And this season too, like, I have to give like big props to everyone this season, because the actors for Mythos are just phenomenal. And I just pray that all of them will carry over into Lore. Because it's just superb, like the talent that, you know, even first season was good, but, you know, you had a couple of those, like I did a haunt, you right. know, it's like, oh, I don't mean to say this, but you're not a real actor, you know, you're a jump scare, you know, and, right. and there's a different level.
Levels there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we've got high schoolers, you know, who are just starting out. We've got like early college people, you know, there's a few who are very seasoned in the cast, and a lot of people mainly film. On certain ends, and then there's a lot of theater people too, but no one's ever really, I mean, this is new for all of us,
right?
Yeah.
And just kind of as we wrap up here, I'm curious, I want to go into that to let all of our listeners know that this is a new thing for everyone. So if you are interested in auditioning and coming to Evermore and right, that's something that you can learn, and I'm sure Bobby and some of the others that have been there forever can help you out, especially.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Bobby,
I think we have auditions coming up.
Yeah,
soon.
I was just going to ask that. We haven't seen anything, and obviously if this is something that you can't share, don't. But
I don't know if there's a date that's been released yet, but I anticipate probably within the next couple of weeks there'll be, okay. at most next couple of weeks, there'll be something posted looking for new talent for Perfect. The Lore season.
So watch out for that. I'm sure all over social media and everything, that'll be blasted everywhere.
Yeah.
And, that you can come and enjoy the park as an actor and as a world walker, right? Get into the park and really engage, as you said, Bobby. We love that. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Oh, loved it.
Thank you.
So awesome.
So appreciate it.
Mad love to you guys. I love what you do. And I just love the enthusiasm too. It's great to know that there's people out there that do appreciate all the subtle craziness that we do at Evermore.
So much more than you have even heard. this podcast
more
came,
than you can ever know.
This podcast came because we would just stay after hours there at the park or at our homes and just geek out about amazing actors, interactions, everything. So
everything about it.
We as in Evermore pretty much do the same thing every night too. So like when we go back to studio, we're just like sharing our stories of the evening, talking about guests that kind of stood out to us, and just kind of geeking out. And so it's really, really fun.
So did you hear that, everyone? They're talking about you.
Yeah. Just, we love the World Walkers.
Just nerds loving nerds. That's,
yeah,
all it is.
Exactly.
That's what it comes down to.
It's all nerd love.
It's all nerd love.
Well, perfect. Bobby, did you have anything else that you wanted to add or spread awareness of, or anything in general?
No, just come to Evermore, please. It's an amazing thing that we're trying to do here. It's I've kind of prided myself for the past 10 years of kind of doing like what we call maybe more avant-garde kind of theater and avant-garde kind of performances. What I feel that Evermore is doing is taking it to a whole other level, which I think would be, it's perfect for this day and age in our society where we're kind of socially separating ourselves. I think Evermore kind of brings us together. And that's one of my favorite things I was going to comment too on was, yeah, you want to covet that information you work so hard for. But one of my favorite things is when I see like groups banding together and sharing their information. They're like, oh, this is what we got. And then before you know it, you know, you've got like these little detective groups like running around like, well, you guys go to the mausoleum and get this, and we're going to the burrows to find out the truth about this. You know, it's brilliant, you know. And you were all strangers like an hour before coming into the park. And then within that time, like, it's amazing, like, how many people bonded. And now even through social media, it's just growing and growing and growing. This little family of world walkers.
Yeah. We have met some really good friends that we trust with our information. And we are grateful because, especially during Mythos, there's so much information out there that we can't all do it out. We can't do it alone. So, yes, I love that as well, that as we've made friends, that we have been getting information and meeting awesome people around.
Yeah, the community for this is amazing. It's like not a toxic community or anything like those things you worry about. Like, oh, I really like this game, but the community is terrible. Like, I love the Everfolk community that's tied around Evermore. And so I hope it keeps growing.
Definitely, yeah, we do as well.
We just want to thank you guys for listening to our episode and all the love that you've given us. We appreciate your feedback, and we are always listening to what you got to say.
Thank you so much to Bobby here with us for joining us. And thank you for listening and for going to Evermore. We really appreciate everything that they have done and create for us to explore and to experience there.
We invite you to follow the park at evermore.com and also on their Instagram at Evermore Park or at Evermore Creative Studio.
You can follow us at our handle at World Talkers. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram with that handle.
We invite you to call in at our number 801-332-9321. Leave us a message and talk to us about what you guys think about the current story or about any questions that you might have.
You can also email us at worldtalkers.podcast@gmail.com. We've got some great comments that are coming up that we are going to share from all over. People are coming from all over the world and sharing their experiences with us. So thank you so very much for that. Email us there.
And finally, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to. It's super important for podcasts like us to help and grow and expand and especially tell the good news of Evermore to all the ends of the world.
And as we kind of sign off here, we just want to once again thank you so much, Bobby.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. This was awesome.
It's been a lot of fun, and we've learned a lot. And we are really excited to use what we've learned the next time we go
Beyond the Portal.